think, will be doing the stuff where you get wet.
Yeah.
Because he is a duathlete.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, it's a duathlon, isn't it?
He could do that.
Swim and a run.
Yeah, he likes that bike stuff. Kevin Gulati. In fact, I think he won the duathlon today in
Kevin
Solana.
Gulati.
He absolutely.
He's the man.
He is amazing duathlete. Kevin, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing awesome, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
We are spectacular. Now,
hey, I think I'm going to pass on touching your monkey.
Well, hey, you know what? You say that now.
You're lost, baby.
Yeah.
You're lost.
Famous last word.
Yeah. Hey, so Kevin, take us back a little bit. When did you get into all this multi-sport stuff?
You know, I got into it on a bet at the University of Iowa in college. A good buddy of mine bet me to do one. Tim DeBoom ended up winning that day's race, and I did it on a mountain bike with a Camelback.
Nice.
This is going back almost 18 years, almost. And I realized that day I loved it. I was hooked.
And so, I mean, you're living in, of course, the hotbed for triathlon in Iowa. Anything multi-sports. You think you came out of Iowa. So from that race, did you all of a sudden get yourself a nice bike and go, I'm going pro here?
That's pretty much what happened. I did a few more races. There was a big series back then that traveled around the U.S. called the Dare to Keep the Kids Off Drugs series.
Uh-huh.
Pretty popular at the same time Coors Light Series was going on. And I realized I was pretty good at this. And from there, it led to more races, improved the bikes, and more or less, it allowed me to move out to here in California 15 years ago purely to race. I've been reading all the magazines, and it always mentioned Solana Beach and Cardiff and this North County, and I moved out here to Lacadia, having never been here before in my life, didn't know anybody, put everything in a U-Haul, drove out. And now I own a home and a business, and I've been racing out here for 15, 16 years.
So, Kevin, at what point did you think, you know what, maybe the mountain bike and Camelback thing's not going to cut it. Maybe I need to pick it up a notch.
Yeah.
I realized it the very day I did that first race. As I stood over my bike after the race, puking up a half gallon of water.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, and all the little old ladies with the paper on the back and the rack who had gone by you on the bike. That was,
it was my big knobby tires.
Yeah,
I got savvy to the game pretty quick. I've refined to things quite a bit.
So, but were you pro there for a while, or did you always stay as an age group guy and have your own business and things like that?
You know, I raced elite for a few years before I had a bad accident, and then that accident in 2001 kind of changed my whole outlook on life and racing and what was important to me and. I raced at the elite level, never was able to beat a Kenny Souza, for example, but raced him many times back in that Coors Light series, met Power Man Chicago,
right.
and those races, but that's kind of at the highest level that I went.
Take us through the accident, Kevin. You just come back from the World Championships overseas somewhere?
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story. I had just returned home from the Worlds in Rimini, Italy, in 2001, and I got home at about 11:30 at night from plane flight. Got on the bike the next day about noon, going for an easy spin, and I never made it home. And as it turns out on that ride, I was hit from behind by a very large 350 moving van. Threw me about 65 feet or so, broke my back in two places, T11, T12 fracture, broke my left arm, broke my left leg, and left me in a hospital for 3 weeks in ICU, which is, 24-hour round-the-clock care for 2 full weeks, which is pretty rare. A couple blood transfusions later and a year of rehab, and here I am today.
So, Kevin, where was this? Was this here in North County?
Yeah, this was on Del Mar Heights Road, way back east, past the shopping center that's back there. You know where the Party 5K used to run?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
by Torrey Pines High School.
Yep, right back in that area on the downside of the hill going east past all of the shopping center and whatnot. I was coming up that hill. And he came from, that's a three lane out there, he came from lane three over into the bike lane and crushed me. Broke my bike into three different pieces, a carbon fiber bike.
So Kevin, did they have any idea? I mean, he came over three lanes of traffic.
I was going to say,
what was he doing?
And you're in the bike lane.
Yeah, what was he doing? Was it like...
There was, unfortunately, I hope nobody ever has to go through this, not just the pain and suffering, but just the legal battles that ensue from this, because there's a lot of finger pointing. Of course, they're saying I came out of the bike lane. We have experts that can diagram the height of the bike, the location of the brakes, the location of my injuries, the skid marks, and demonstrate exactly what happened. They have their experts. But the theory was there was probably something like a cell phone call taking place or looking at paperwork. It was a work truck looking for his next location, wasn't paying attention, and I did not even know it was coming. I woke up on the ground screaming and crying. I remember the first thing I said, you know, why did you hit me?
Yeah. And what'd he say?
I couldn't tell you what he said. I have no idea.
Oh, God.
I just kind of blanked in and out, and the next thing I said, I remember the paramedic saying to me, you know, you don't think this, but you're pretty lucky because we normally pick guys like you up with a shovel.
Oh, God. So you get to the hospital, and what's the, you know, in terms of the prognosis, it seemed like from our conversations that they misdiagnosed you for a while.
Yeah, well, coming to the ER was just like what you see in the television show, ER. Yeah. It was chaotic, cutting my clothes off, screaming, yelling, because I was in pretty bad shape, kind of coming in and out of consciousness and just, screaming, crying, pain.
Sure.
I was pretty twisted, and they were so concerned on the immediate injuries they could see, a broken arm, a broken leg. I had a hematoma about the size of a football on my left leg. That's where I actually took the blow from the truck, and that's why I needed blood transfusions, that in all of this looking around for those immediate issues they had to address, they overlooked the fractured back and weren't even aware of it until about 2 weeks into where I was complaining about my back hurting, and I just said, well, yeah, you know, you were shaking around like a rag doll, throwing 65 feet, what do you expect? But little did we know, there was, in fact, two fractures in my back, and it was compromising my spinal cord.
So how is it possible that you basically get run over from behind and you end up in an ER, but you don't get, I don't know,
like
x-rays
of your back?
Yeah.
How is it possible that I'm here? And
how did they not see the broken back?
How did they not x-ray your back and your neck and everything else?
You know, that's a great question. And a lot of that came up, you know, legally with a little bit of battles that took place. And, you know, we looked at the hospital and said, you know, how can this happen? And essentially their explanation was, you know, when traumas come in, we look for those things that are life-threatening. We look for those things that are immediate. And let me tell you guys, I had more CAT scans and more MRIs and more x-rays in a matter of 2 weeks than I care to ever have again, and most people would ever have in a lifetime. I mean, I was going in and out of them almost around the clock, shuttled from one to another. So I really don't have a great answer for you as to how they missed it, but they did.
Wow. And so they miss it. And you're complaining, obviously, of back pain. And their feeling is that you don't have much of a threshold for pain. You're just being a whiner.
Yep. That somehow I'm complaining about some sort of phantom issue that's not there. There's nothing in the x-rays, nothing in the CAT scans that they see. And, you know, it's just residual damage from being flopped around so much and thrown so far and you know, just shaking. And that's, and I'm just... I'm upset, I'm frustrated, I'm in pain, I'm on morphine, you know, I'm angry inside, and I think they just kind of, I remember telling the nurse this many, I even remember telling the nurse, please write this down that I'm complaining about my back. And they have that in the notes, the lawyers are able to find that.
Because the doctors are saying there's nothing there.
Yeah, there's, you know, we found everything that matters, and everybody was pretty shocked. When we started getting into the back issue and what they found, everybody was pretty stunned.
I mean, an athlete, Huddle, you know this. You know your body. When you're training at that level, you have a sense of what's right and what's wrong and what's, you know, you have an injury. Doctor might say there's not a problem, but you know from all the stuff you've been doing that there's a problem.
You would think anybody that broke their back would know there's a problem, but yeah, an athlete especially.
An athlete is so attuned to their body, so... So how did when they finally realized that there was a problem with your back, I mean, had they released you from the hospital at that point? And was there some danger of them not, immobilizing
them? Yeah, well, because I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, two of it in ICU, then my third week I was transport over to Oceanside, Tri-City Medical, which is like a rehab hospital.
Yeah.
That's when everything started to come to light, and that's when everybody kicked into overdrive, started to realize what was happening. I kind of think it lit a fire to them because they started realizing the potential of what this meant for them, having missed something like this.
Yeah.
Then I started going to a spine specialist, one of the best. He was the head of Scripps Memorial, where I was originally taken for the ICU. And it was at that point that I realized the true severity of what was really going on. And that's when everything really kind of spiraled out of control, because it went from, you know, you're going to be okay. And, you know, because you're an athlete, you bounced, you didn't break, is what one of the doctors told me. I mean, I broke, but for the average guy, I probably would have pulverized him. It's because I was healthy and strong and had strong bones that I survived. But when they started looking at x-rays and CAT scans, it was plain as day, you guys. Plain as day.
So is that a case where the inflammation is so great or something that they can't see it, or was it just something that they simply weren't looking for, regardless of your complaints?
I think, recalling that, it was they weren't looking for it. They do certain tests, as you'll see, like on ER, you know, rub your toes and these other sorts of looking more in the – maybe there's something I should add to this. They're looking more maybe in your neck region, for example, to make sure you're not paralyzed. Mine was in a thoracic.
Yeah,
which is a very hard place to fracture, but a very scary place to fracture. It's very high up, and so the vertebrae are very small, so they don't carry as much load as your lower lumbar. And so I just don't think they were looking there, because my arms work, my legs work. I had no sort of lack of sensation or anything like that. It was just a pain in the back because I was so immobilized for so long. I was in a hospital bed. I was in a bed for probably 6 weeks. That without any sort of movement, nothing else came to light. It was when I really started to move that I started having these sensation issues. I started having more pain. I started having a jolting pain down my legs, you guys, that I remember telling my dad, if this lasts any more than 1 or 2 seconds, I'd rather be dead.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Because it was that. I mean, I never knew the human body could feel that type of pain. And like I say, then we started looking to this seriously, and then that's when they took very specific x-rays and CAT scans, and there it was. Like I say, it was plain as day.
Because it seems like when someone gets run over that badly, I'm guessing that, you know, you check absolutely everything.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially back and neck.
Yeah.
So Kevin, at this point, when they realize there's some serious trauma to the back, what's their solution? Were they talking about fusing?
Well, the first thing they did was they put me in a device called a Jewett brace, which is pretty much an aluminum brace clamshell. Bob, you saw me.
I saw you at Frogs working out with this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, lifting 2-pound weights that would tire me out, and, you know, because I lost 100% muscle mass. But
and how much, how much weight did you lose?
I lost 30 pounds.
And what did you weigh to begin with?
150 pounds. I came out of the hospital 120, and they had little calculations where they would say X amount of muscle mass loss per day of no usage, and that by the time I was out was 100% muscle mass loss. I have photos where my broken arm, for example, up by the bicep is thinner than my wrist.
Oh, God.
I was curling soup cans in my kitchen as physical rehab when I first got home, and that would tire me out.
But boy, you were ready to do some climbing on the bike, though, huh?
Oh yeah, you're ready to rip it. You're ready. So were they talking about fusing? What were they talking about to do with your back?
Yeah, well, here's kind of an interesting spin on this whole story. I had a doctor, and he was, like I say, one of the best. As a matter of fact, when I was going through all this, I happened to be looking through a magazine one day of all the best surgeons in their respective fields: heart, brain, spine. This guy's listed there.
Right.
He wrote the textbooks. This guy's the man. The moment he saw, and this just like made my heart stop when I saw this. The moment he looked at that, when I went to his office, put that x-ray up on the wall, looked at it, he looked at his associate, looked at that x-ray again, and looked at me, and he's pretty much, I don't know how you're walking around, and I don't know how you're in as little pain, although you think it's great pain, as you are, because most people that we see like this aren't moving. And he said, the top half of your spine is not connected to the bottom half of your spine right now. Your ligaments are stretched. The back, you have two compression fractures. and the spinous processes, which are those little nubs that stick off your spine that you see when you're looking at somebody's back, were cracked off.
Oh, my God.
So their solution was, you need surgery, and you need it 3 weeks ago. And that means we're going to go through your back and put titanium rods in. Then we're going to flip you over. We're going to pop your lung. We're going to take out a couple of your ribs, and we're going to fuse you from the front. And there's a chance you may die while we do it.
Hmm, that sounds like fun.
Wow, what a great idea.
God, that sounds like a pretty uplifting.
That's what I was left with. And so, you know, honestly, you guys, I prayed for 5-6 days of what the best course of action was you know, what to do. I did mad research on the internet. Have you ever had a doctor call you? Doctors don't call people.
Right.
You know, the person who mans the phones calls you.
Right.
Or their secretary calls you. This doctor called me, as many as I remember, this one Sunday, 3 or 4 times till he got me on the phone and said, Kevin, you need to give serious consideration to having this surgery. And in the end run, I decided not to have it.
So he basically said, what were the options? If you did not do the surgery, what would happen to you?
You play it by ear and you see what happens. And that's the amazing thing that happened. Because what ended up happening was my body self-fused those vertebrae.
Wow.
And in the first series of x-rays that we had after, you could clearly see the break, you can see the damage to the vertebrae, you can see the damage to the spinous processes, you can see the compression fractures, etc. You start to see a little bit of bone spur growth from T12 up to T11. And then a couple months later, you see a little more. And a couple months later, you see a little more. And months after this is, we've come to the stage where it's kind of past the point of surgery. Now we let it go. It had my body had self-fused and thrown, you know, a bone growth up to that T11. Now, essentially, from my understanding, I now have one massive vertebrae. It's like T11/12.
So if you had done the surgery, if you'd gone through with it, what was your prognosis after that?
Never gonna run again. Never going to ride again, and a great potentiality of a life full of pain, as many people who've had back surgeries can attest to. They're not always successful. Some are. Many aren't. And a lot of discomfort, you know, and maybe it'll work, Kevin. Maybe it won't. But the statistics say this is what you should be doing.
Wow.
And you chose not to. Your back ended up fusing on its own, and you were able to remain active.
Yeah, and I've had, you know, I've been raced around here, like I say, 15-plus years. I've been, you know, almost every race director that's been around, I've done their races. Like, you know, we did cause race today. I've done cause races for 15 years. I'm PRing, and I'm winning, and I'm turning over faster times since that accident than before that accident.
And you won the race today, right?
I won the race today, yeah.
Okay. He won the race today, Huddle. You're going to the Worlds back in Italy, what, in a couple weeks?
September 29th is Short Course World Championships.
Yeah. And if
in Rimini. And last year, Short Course World Championships was in Euro-Hungary, and I was the fifth fastest American overall.
Any conversations with this doctor since?
Great. I'm glad you asked that story. 2 years ago, Long Course World Championships was in back in Italy. And I raced long course and short course, which was in Sydney later in the year, that both in the same year. I like short course. I think I'm a little bit better suited for that high intensity for short periods of time. But nevertheless, I'm getting on the flight back from Italy. I'm walking through first class. I look over. There's my doctor.
No way.
I swear to God, the exact's my doctor. I turned to him. I said, do you remember me? He said, Kevin, of course. Kevin Gelati, I mean, you know, everybody who knows me knows I'm a pretty intense guy, and, you know, I've got a lot of energy. And he's, of course, because I was probably the only person he ever had who actually asked questions and didn't take the advice he wanted. I said, do you know where I'm coming from? He said, no. I said, I'm coming from Long Course World Championships, and I was 7th fastest American overall, and I just kept kind of walking. He said, good for you. That's awesome. I wasn't trying to rub it in his face or anything. I was just more saying, you know, here I am. Surprise to both of us.
God. Now,
I mean, who would ever have thought you would see that, you know, on the same plane, your doctor?
In terms of how, if you ran, you know, a 10K then, before, like in 2001, and a 10K now, running the same speed, running faster?
Well, you know, of course, there's a lot of variables. You know, my fitness level and sure. all that aside. I am running and riding both faster than before the accident.
And
I've had numerous PRs on race courses since the accident. I've had numerous PRs in marathon, in half marathon, in 5K, in 10K, and in on you know just individual race courses. You know, we go do them every year. The courses never change, so you can kind of compare year to year. I'm racing faster.
I think you're sort of a miracle.
Yeah, no
kidding. I mean, in terms of pain management, any type of issues?
You know, man, it's funny you say miracle because I think that's exactly, you know, it's at that time that, you know, it sounds trite at times, but I found God and I believe it was a miracle. I just don't think these kind of things, I don't think this happened out of luck. And it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Really?
And I'm fortunate that I don't have a lot of pain. I have discomfort at time in my back, you know, ambient temperatures with the weather. You hear that often with people's knees and backs and whatnot because it changes the viscosity and the fluid density in your back and your knees and the fluid sac. So I have discomfort here and there. I have discomfort if I sit too long or stand too long. But I can tell you this, it's nothing you will ever hear me complain about because it's nothing compared to what it could have been. So to me, it's an absolute non-issue.
So Kevin, have you looked at the statistics on your kind of injury and people who have gone through with the surgery and those who haven't, or have there just really not been that many who haven't
I did at the time of the accident, when it came down to crunch time for me to really make a decision, I was doing mad amounts of research on the internet, including people like Travis Pastrana. I don't know if you
sure.
you know who he
is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
He had a very rare incident take place where he dislocated his spine from his pelvis. So I was doing all kinds of research on just back. I was doing then compression fractures. Compression fractures in the thoracic region versus the other region. I became kind of a pro on the back for that period of time. And it would... Not only do I did not keep statistics now, but at the time it was impossible to find statistics of athletes with these types of injuries versus the common kind of everyday, you know, like my father or something like that.
Sedentary people, yeah.
So it was hard for me to do a comparison of what I was dealing with.
So Kevin, how are you different today than you were before this accident?
I'm a lot more grateful for what I have.
Yeah.
I have a lot more perspective about life and what really matters in life than I had before. I was overly high strung, and I thought things that were really important in life. I realized when you're laying in the hospital bed on the verge of, you know, I had to have 2 blood transfusions. They said if I didn't, I'd die. When you're looking at that, you can spend a lot of time laying in the hospital bed with nothing to do. You spend a lot of time thinking about how you put out into the world, what you get back in the world, how you treat others, what really matters and what's important. And it's really kind of my word now for me is perspective. It just put a lot of perspective on life and what's truly important and what really matters. And a lot of the stuff we think that matters every single day doesn't really mean jack.
You're absolutely right.
Unfortunately, it took to me an incident like that happening for me to finally open my eyes and realize, you know, kind of the path I was going down as a person, and I wasn't really caring for it. And that's why I say, ultimately, it was probably the best thing that ever could have happened to me, ever.
Oof.
What are some examples?
And I'm grateful for it.
What are some examples of Kevin before and Kevin after?
Kevin before? Today, I was racing through this race. You may not have known this, Bob, but I slipped and fell during the transition. T2. Coming into T2, I took a tight turn and fell to the pavement holding my bike trying to get to my rack.
Right.
Kevin, before the accident, I would have been up in somebody's grill, the race director's or somebody's grill, about that happening. Somehow it wouldn't have been my fault.
Right. It was slippery.
Kevin, after, it's just part of racing. I got up. I didn't even miss a beat. I kept going.
Yeah.
So I was a lot more high strung before the accident. I was a lot more willing to go toe to toe and tangle with people about stuff that just really didn't matter. And now I understand that. So the Kevin after is I'm willing to listen a bit more. I'm willing to think a bit more before I speak.
You know, Kevin was the type of guy at the races. He was the type of guy that, you know, was like, you know, they should have had better awards. They should have had this. They should have had that. Now
very
it's
verbal.
Very verbal, and it was
so
always
kind of it's kind of a race director's nightmare. Is
he
what
was,
you're saying.
But not anymore.
Really?
Now he's like, you know, we were sort of screwing around with Kaz today, saying, "Hey, you should do the duathlon awards earlier." And then Kevin comes up and he says, "Did you make sure Kaz knows that I was just jerking with him?" And I went up.
Well,
he said, and Kaz goes,
"Kaz
goes, I know he's jerking with me."
Yeah, there's something funny about Kaz. Many years ago, at a race that I had won, we were waiting for the awards, and of course, you know, the duathlon was the second race, and so the triathlon went first. So by the time the awards came out, it's a sparse crowd. I walked up to the here's an example of Kevin before.
Yeah,
I walked up to the podium, I took my award, and I walked away. And they wanted to take pictures and ask me a few questions for winning. And I just wasn't having it because I was so angry for you know, just the delay and just kind of that gibberish.
Yeah.
Years later, four years ago after the accident, I was out, of course, all of 2002. I came back to race in 2003 with kind of a vengeance, a new fire. And I made a specific effort to track down Kaz and apologize to him for something that happened 3 or 4 years earlier at that race event, because it had been bothering me so long inside that I have dedicated my life to this sport. I mean, I've been in this sport for, you know, 15, 18 years almost. It's taken me all over the world, and I disrespected a race director, and I disrespected the sport, and had been bothering me for a long time, and I try to make amends for that.
That's great, Kev.
You're Earl.
Yeah. He's become, you got your karma list. You got your karma list. That's right. My name is Earl.
I love that. It's classic.
Hey, Kevin, congrats on the win today. Congrats on the, it is a miracle.
It is a miracle.
What you've come back from, it's a miracle, and you're a testament to a guy who looks at something like this and goes, you know what? Yeah, similar to Lance. Yeah, it's not something I want to do it again, but in the long run, I look back on it, and it made me a better person, made me stronger.
Yeah, no doubt. It was the best thing that ever happened, and I'm glad I went through it, but I would never wish it on anybody. I would hope that everybody would get the message about the important things in life without having to have
really.
Yeah,
like
no,
without
no
a truck running
no
you over. Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, I got to ask you one question. What's the deal with airportgyms.com? Is that you? Is that your thing?
Yeah, airportgyms.com is a website that I started years ago, like 2002, just kind of on a whim. I was spending so much time at kind of right before that accident with World Championships, and then soon after, traveling and having these long layovers and nothing to do. And I thought, you know, there's got to be some way to kind of grab a bunch of gyms that are located in or near terminals in, you know, North American airports in Canada, and put them on a website, make them available free to people. So I have this website, airportgyms.com, you can go to. You can find the airport you're traveling through or have a delay in and see if there's a gym, and it's kind of a criteria of, you know, 10 to 15 minutes cab ride, and it lists the gym, the location, and it's all free. Anybody can use it, and I rely solely on the users to provide the gym listings.
Nice.
So I get listings all the time from people that are all over the United States. Hey, this gym in Pittsburgh, try this, add this. And that's what it's all about. So, yeah, that's me. It's just something. It's one of those small ways I feel like I can kind of give back to the race community for something that I've
You know, it's really cool. It's a really useful site. I mean, I thought it was a great idea. And I looked at that. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's free. It's all right there. Just click on the state, and it'll tell you the airport and the gym that's closest to it.
Love it.
Hey. Well, you know, I make a living off the Internet. So, for me, it's just a small way to give back to people, you know, and not charge anything for it and just let them have at it. And it's open source, so people can provide me information. I'll put it up there.
Hey, Kevin, that's great. Hey, congrats, bud.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks,
pleasure.
Joe.
Kevin Gelati.
Ciao.
All right. Brought to you by Rubio's, Jamba Juice, CompetitorRadio.com, MuddyBuddy.com. Is it SurfMonkey.com? What is it?
Multisports.com/surfmonkey.
/surfmonkey.
You can just click on the link on the homepage.
Hey, after break, we're going to talk to the one, the only AJ Acosta, who's not on fire and his leg did not fall off. Hold on. We'll be right back.